This is the John Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Bonjour, Monica.
Bonjour, Jessica.
How are you this evening?
I laugh at your pain. Lorelai.
It's Gilmore Girls Fall, everyone.
Bonjour, Lorelai.
Rory.
Luke. Luke. The dragonfly in again.
Oh my god. How are you, Monica?
I'm well, Jessica. How are you?
I'm doing quite well this evening. You know?
No, I don't know.
we have to talk about this because we were just watching the trailer for
the other Australian.
For the other Australian actress that we love, the original Arnor, Nicole Kidman.
Arnor, it's Nicole Kidman.
We were watching the trailer for the, what's it called, Aaron? Being the Ricardos?
It's like a Lucille Ball,
yeah.
Desi, what's his face?
Desi Arnaz
biopic.
Yeah.
But it's like, isn't it a mini series?
No.
It's just a
movie.
It's just a movie. People make those still?
Yeah. Amazon does.
People make movies still?
Jeff Bezos said, you know what I love? I love Lucy.
You know, Aaron Sorkin has had his hands in a lot of little cookie jars around town. Netflix?
Yeah.
Amazon?
So
Apple?
Thrilled to see that he wrote this.
Apple?
Less thrilled to see that he directed it. Aaron, we told you. We talked about this in the Aaron Sorkin episode. Why are you still directing?
Why are you still directing, Aaron?
I understand that people are giving you money to do so, but we strongly advised you against it.
We strongly advised. Just get David Lynch to do it. I'm sure he'd be fine.
You want a fucking blue-ass velvet version of Lucille Ball?
Yes. Can you imagine?
Nar?
Lucille Ball, but it's Eraserhead.
That sounds like the worst movie ever made.
It's
Lucille. But then again, this is written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, so it might also still be the worst
money.
I don't know. I'm sorry, Aaron. I love you, but we have to stick to the writing.
I like
that's
you,
where
head.
The money is. You know, that's where the money is.
That's where the money is. You're. That's not right.
That's not where the finances are. It's like where.
That's not where the finances.
It's where like the money material.
Oh my god! Someone.
Is.
So. Oh, you're talking about the money shot. Basically.
Yeah. I say this as someone who is not Aaron Sorkin and not making millions and millions of dollars. But trust me, sir.
You're telling me that Aaron Sorkin doesn't have a billy?
A
billy?
I'm sure he has bill. No. I would think he's just a millionaire.
Maybe just... Just
multi, like in the tens or hundreds, perhaps. What,
can you imagine if he just had $1 million?
He loves
like
to spend
1,000.
That man loves
zero
to shop. He loves to shop till he drops.
Like, I have a feeling that he banks at Chase.
I mean, who doesn't?
I don't.
I do.
I bank it. I mean, I'm not going to say.
Where do you bank, Monica?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, okay.
So my routing number is...
I mean, you could give it out. People could send you money.
Oh my God, that's so true. My Venmo is... I don't even know my Venmo offhand.
I know mine.
I feel like I should have a Cash App. What is that? Can you explain Cash App
to
me?
No, because I don't have that either.
What is Cash App?
I also hear people talk about Zelle.
Oh, I do like Zelle. It's my favorite.
Isn't that only if you have Bank America, though?
No. What the fuck? No.
Oh, sorry.
It's for other banks. Banks that I bank at.
Like what? Just tell me your bank.
You'll never know my bank.
I thought we were close.
We are close. Clothes.
Not close enough to know what bank you're at. I told you my bank.
I feel like you've definitely seen my bank.
Probably. I just don't remember.
You've definitely held my wallet.
Is it Wells Fargo?
No.
It's not Bank of America. It's not Wells Fargo and it's not Chase.
No.
Ooh, who else is out there?
There's plenty of
Citibank. Did you know? You didn't know this because I didn't tell you. I came home from the mountains And I had a Citibank debit card waiting at my home for me being like, congratulations, you got your account accepted. Here's your PIN number, everything. I did not apply for said debit card.
Well, so you don't apply for a debit card.
They do. No, you apply and then they give it to you.
No, they give it to you when you apply for a checking account.
Well, yes, that's what I mean.
But you don't apply
for a checking account.
Debit card.
And so they were like, here's your card, whatever. And so I called them and I was like, I did not ask for this. So what do I do? And they're like, well, this is considered fraud, ma'am, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, that's fine. I understand that. But first of all, I pay for like a fraud service and it did not detect it. And then also I was like, who the fuck steals someone's identity to open a checking account? There's no money in it. There's no... It's mine and I didn't put money there. So there's nothing in it. Also, they had it sent to my home. So you don't have the card anyway. This just feels like a very silly, silly fraud moment.
Silly fraud.
And now they're like, you need to call and put credit alerts on everything. I'm like, probably, but also this just feels stupid.
It honestly does feel stupid.
It feels very dumb.
Here's the thing. I always tell people to pay for things on a credit card and not a debit card because credit cards have a lot more security measures on them.
Right.
If you lose your debit card and someone goes like buck fucking wild at the stump town, you're fucked.
Yeah. At the stump town? Well, they buy a fuck ton of beans.
They buy all the beans.
They bought so much cold brew.
Fraud.
Do you know how much it costs? It's like $10 for 8 ounces.
But you don't understand. They buy the jugs.
The growlers?
Yeah.
I hate that's what that's called some reason.
I don't get it.
I hate it.
But like what I'm saying is if they like go buck wild at the stump town, you're fucked.
It's true. I am fucked.
And your money's just gone. The bank is like, oh, that's your money. So we don't care. But if you have if you're buying things on a credit card mm-hmm. and your credit card gets stolen, the creditor goes, it's my money. So I do give a fuck.
Yeah, it's true. This is very true.
This is America.
This is America.
Get with it, guys. Do the thing that is easier for the big bank and not easier for you. Do you want to use your money? No. Use someone else's money and then pay them back.
And then pay it back later and probably get travel points in the process. Thank you. Mic drop.
This was an entire ad dedicated to the Delta credit card.
So we are actually transitioning to being a financial advice podcast.
So JetBlue has a great credit card. Just kidding. I've only flown JetBlue like 3 times.
That's a nice airline.
You can tell how good an airline is by how good their snacks are.
And their movie selection.
Delta has incredible snack selections. They have a tiny little charcuterie board. A charcuterie board.
Is that also the airline that gives you the little, they can sell you the different boxes?
Is that
Delta?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
They have like a ham box.
Ham box! It just has different types of meat in it.
It has like different like cures of ham.
I mean, honestly, sounds great. I love a nice cured meat.
I love cures.
Parma ham. I just found this out today and it seems like a dumb thing to just have figured out. But Parma ham and Parmesan are from the same place in Italy.
What?
Yes.
Man,
can you imagine that much flavor in one city?
Man.
I can't.
They have really monopolized that big Parma
that
over there.
That umami flavor. Big Parma! Oh, that took me a minute, but it was good. That was
really
good. Big Parma.
Mamma mia.
We can't top it. We just have to move on now.
No. But we can top it with cheese, Mr. Squidward. With a cheese.
With cheese. Okay, Monica. Who are we talking about today?
Will, Jessica?
Yes.
Today we're talking about the one and only, a clear contender for Best Australian Daddy 2021.
Oh, you're right. This is a clear contender.
A clear contender. Not that there was ever a competition and not that we're hosting a competition.
We might be.
But I've decided this now.
I might have ordered trophies.
She's a contender.
Okay.
Or rather, a contender down under.
How would they say it though? Because we really do lean heavily into New Zealand. And I feel like the Australians are much more delicate with their accent.
Kintinda.
That's worse.
Kintinda. Nintendo.
Meaty bigger.
Meaty bigger. Not me. Not a mayonnaise.
Is this the most unhinged episode to date? Perhaps, dear listener, perhaps. Monica's dancing. What is going on? And are you waving your white flag?
No, it's the claw.
Oh, okay.
I've made my hand in the shape of a claw from one of those claw machines.
Oh, it also is reminding me of the young lad in Hereditary.
Oh my God. This is going to be in an upcoming episode, but...
Monica's doing the hand motion that the boy does in Hereditary where he sticks his hand up
not,
in the air.
Not Nat Wolf, but the other one. The other naked Wolf. Brother. From the Naked Brothers Band.
Alex Wolf. Okay, Monica, tell us about the daddy today.
I shall. The daddy today is Cate Blanchett. Let me tell you a little bit about our girl, Cate.
Tell me.
Catherine Elise Blanchett is the other Australian actress and producer. Regarded as one of the best actresses of her generation, she is noted for her versatile roles in blockbusters, independent films, and stage work in various theater productions.
Wow.
Interestingly, Blanchett is the only actress hailing from Australia who has won 2 Academy Awards. Nicole Kidman.
Nicole, you have been dethroned.
Blanchett is also the recipient of 3 Golden Globe Awards, 3 British Academy Film Awards, and 3 Screen Actor Guild Awards. Wow. She is the BFF of fellow actress Sarah Paulson, whose shared famed Trash Fire Today interview about Ocean's 8 skyrocketed them into chaotic meme queen territory.
You have to go watch the interview if you haven't seen it yet.
It's have to.
So funny.
It is so unhinged. It is so funny.
They're insane.
Literally a garbage fire.
They're
of an
just
interview.
Tanking the interview, and Hoda is crying, and there's a lot.
And they're just like slapping each other
and being so mean to
being
each
so
other.
Mean. One of them literally is like, who styled you? Like, yeah, you look
Cate
like
looks
trash.
At Sarah and she's just like, you need a stylist.
You need a stylist.
Okay.
Cate is every nerd's hot fantasy as that one elf queen in the Lord of the Rings. Honestly, don't know her name.
Don't know her name either, but she's a great elf.
She's the one with the ears.
Erin is so upset, but we're just gonna keep moving.
Let's keep going. She also played the best character in The Aviator.
Yes.
But that is up for debate.
It's not.
No, it's not. Speaking of her role in The Aviator, where she did a mean Katharine Hepburn mid-Atlantic accent, she has also been praised for her mastery over a wide array of diverse accents, from English, Irish, and French to various regional American accents. She's also a real-life daddy to 4 children. Also, her other Oscar was for Blue Jasmine. Sorry, Nicole. Give it up for Nicole Kidman. I mean, yes. Cate Blanchett.
Wahoo.
Woo.
I love this bitch.
She's so good. Her mouth is crazy.
Yes.
Whenever she wears red lipstick, it like goes all the way to the end of her mouth.
Because her mouth is, she has a very large mouth.
Her mouth is huge.
Huge mouth.
Huge mouth.
Big star.
Strong bone structure.
Very strong.
Huge mouth. Big star.
Okay. I'm going to tell you about her first film. Are you ready, Monica?
What is the first film?
The first film is Elizabeth. Came out in 1998. Directed by Shekhar Kapoor. Screenplay by Michael Hirst.
Ooh.
Elizabeth Tudor, played by Cate Blanchett, becomes queen of a divided and dangerous England in 1558. That's a long time ago.
Are you kidding me?
A rather long time ago.
I was there.
That was just yesterday. She is roundly perceived as weak by threats from within and abroad, and she is strongly advised to marry by Council William Cecil.
I fucking hate that last name.
Played by Richard Attenborough. but she will be married only to her country. Intelligent and cautious, she must choose where to place her trust. With her shrewd secretary, Walsingham, played by Jeffrey Rush, a master of espionage, or her secret lover, Sir Robert Dudley, played by Joseph Fine.
These fucking names.
Incredible names. Joseph Fine was also in Shakespeare in Love in the same year.
And he was fine.
He was fucking fine.
Fine in this both movie. Of these.
Because like Shakespeare in Love, he's like so passionate. And this one, he's also passionate, but he's just sad the whole time. And he's there's like, something about like a sexy, sad guy that really gets
he's like
the juices flowing. You know what I mean?
Brooding and moody.
Yes. He like his he always looks like he was just crying.
Yes.
The whole time.
Correct. Correct. Also, his chemistry with Kate is just through the fucking roof.
It's fucking disgusting. But then again, so like, gross. He's the same way with Gwyneth in Shakespeare in Love, which makes me believe that Joseph Fine is just such a sensual actor
that
he can have fucking chemistry with a piece of toast. Like, I'm convinced. I would watch that love story.
Oh, God. Is he in any way related to the other Fine?
He is. They are brothers. There are like five of them, I think.
That's so brilliant.
Brilliant. The brilliant Fine brothers.
I love that. I love that for them.
Rafe, of course, is the most famous, but...
Rafe is the most famous.
Joseph is second.
But Joseph is
fine. Joseph Fine is fine.
Is fine as fuck. Especially in this movie.
That's my first note for this movie in all caps. Okay, Joseph Fine is back and he is fine as hell.
Incredible. I love that. Yeah, here's the thing. Cate Blanchett in this movie, you get a first glimpse at her and she is just angelic. But not just angelic and not just like ethereal, but also like really grounded and strong.
She's like hypnotic.
Oh, yeah.
And
you cannot take your eyes off of her.
No, it's kind of insane. And this was the movie that like gave her like worldwide acclaim.
Yes.
This is when people were like, oh, this is another Australian after Nicole Kidman. No, oh this God. Is where they started to know the name Cate Blanchett after this movie.
This put her on the map.
It's put her on the map. And I really like historical dramas, but I wasn't sure if I would like this. I wasn't sure if it would be like boring or something. Mm-hmm. But this bitch kept me entertained the whole damn time. She was unhinged. She was wild.
So let's take it back even further. Okay. Even the poster of this movie wild. Is like badass as fuck.
It makes it look very like rock and roll.
I know, but she's very much in like historical garb. And you know, she's very much, but the thing is, she looks like she's giving you the finger, even though she's very much not.
So this is the thing. When I saw the poster for this movie, I was like, this looks like what like Baz Luhrmann tries to do.
Oh my God.
All the time.
Oh my God.
It doesn't come out the same way because he's not trying to focus on historical accuracy.
No.
But like, I would argue that there is a very similar effect going on in which you were prepared for sort of this like badass story and these like, this sort of like rock and roll approach to the monarchy.
Yeah.
But like it doesn't actually look like that. You just are put in that mindset.
Exactly.
You know?
100%.
Very effective marketing for this film.
Her face is also like this white, pale, blank slate, mm-hmm. and only her eyes and mouth offer you any indication of like the hand that she is dealing underneath.
Yes.
It is so good. It is so good.
Yes, and she has that red hair.
Oh, that curly, chunky, honestly kind of crunchy looking red hair. Yeah.
But at the beginning, it's like totally straight.
Oh,
and it's super long, and she looks like a fucking baby angel.
She looks like she's the one from the Lord of the Rings, but with red hair.
Exactly.
And the ears are not pointy.
She's just like crazy ethereal, and she's absolutely stunning to like watch her move. She's like a statue just walking around, just rolling around with Joseph Fine in the sheets.
She's very sensual in this movie.
She is, but it's really interesting because she brings so many fascinating sides to this character, because she starts out as like, she's this young girl. She's in love with this guy.
She's 25 in this movie. Not the actor. I forget how old Cate Blanchett is in this movie, but Elizabeth One is 25 in this movie, right? So she's this young woman.
She's a young woman. And there's a lot of the history that isn't important to this explanation, but
well,
she's hanging out.
She's hanging out. So in 1558, at the age of 25, she took the throne of a Catholic country and then declared it to be Protestant.
Yes, because she herself is Protestant.
Exactly. And fought off the assassination of the French, the Spanish, her rivals, and the Pope from Buca di Beppo.
That little Pope statue?
Literally annihilated him. And then she ruled for 45 fucking years.
Yeah, her and her father, because her father was Henry VIII and her mother was Anne Boleyn.
Exactly.
And they were like, this bitch is never going to be queen. And then she was queen because her sister sadly could not have children at the end.
So sorry.
Sorry, Mary. But the throne is going to Elizabeth. Sorry.
To Lizzie.
But anyway, so like you see these very different, fascinating sides to her because she is this young woman. She is very passionate about her faith and about her country and about this man that she's in love with. But then as soon as she's supposed to become queen, she's like, this is my God-given right.
Yes. Yes.
And her head becomes humongous.
I will have one mistress here and no master.
So good. She's just like, fuck all of you. I don't need no man.
She radiates this sense of purpose and this sense of duty with like, this movie makes me believe that the monarchy are divine and like have divinity.
Yes.
Because of the way that she sort of like locks into her new territory, her new duty, like as if she were ordained by God himself.
Yes.
And again, like, and I watched The Crown. I watched The Crown. I love The Crown. Cannot wait for the next season of The Crown. I've seen all the episodes of The Crown multiple times, but I never once thought to myself, they've been ordained by God himself.
Yeah.
In this movie, Kate Blanchett's performance makes me fundamentally believe that the monarchy is like someone up there is like, bro,
fucking picked her.
You are the one.
This is the first movie that has ever made me like truly understand how they must have felt. Because while we look at it, we're like, this is batshit. Like, how are you this insane? You're running a country, sure, but like we all know that it's kind of arbitrary in the end.
Yes.
But not to them, because there are very real stakes and they are deeply religious and they do deeply believe that they were chosen. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like that they believe and nobody else does. Everyone fucking believes that the king / queen was chosen by the Lord to rule the country. Yeah. And it's insane.
She, in this movie and in history, she's sort of like known as the Virgin Queen, which is hilarious because she's so central in this movie.
I know.
But I think what they meant by that was like, she is just like so devoted to her country that
she
would not take a husband because she only wanted to. Because again, even though she's queen, she's still a woman. Mm-hmm. So she would have to like submit to her husband in ways that like didn't make sense for her stature and divinity. So a lot of it was like, I'm going to not take a husband because I don't want anyone to tell me what the fuck to do.
Correct.
I want to do what I want to do. And Kate Blanchett's head gets so much bigger by the end of the movie. That you're like, does your crown fit, ma'am?
Well, like it's frustrating because you as a viewer, you're just like, girl, tone it down. But then you also have to think about from her point of view, she has all of these men trying to tell her what to do.
So many men.
And she's just like, and all of them are telling her, you're a woman. Like, you can't make these decisions. And she was like, fuck you. Yes, I can. Like, why don't we just try this my way for a little while? And so like it makes sense that she would have this like insanely inflated ego, but the fascinating part of it to watch is like from her to go from that one moment and then in the next like something happens and you can see she's just like a scared young girl again. She does a very good job of putting on the mask of like, I am the monarch. I am royalty.
It is I.
And then when shit hits the fan, you can see how truly scared shitless she is and how she underneath it all is just this innocent young woman who knows fuck all about running a country.
It's true. And the thing is, marriages at this time, and also kind of today, are like social moves, right? Like people do them to get ahead in society. They're like social and economic moves. You marry someone to get their land, to get their cows, to get their Sherpa, mm-hmm. to really just take all of their shit, and then also make yourself beefier in the process. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, nothing would make her beefier than she is now, mm-hmm. which is why she never married. And that pressure, Kate Blanchett just like dances around that so beautifully, because I think she does this thing where she compartmentalizes that pressure and is like, you know what, I'm gonna set that aside to visibly appear like a lion and not take anyone's shit. And it's like very apparent that this is her move, and like mm-hmm. it is very pronounced with like her hair and like how saturated the film is, that she is like very fierce and like out to get you.
Yes.
Because her hair is like this fiery red, and like sometimes whenever she has it like up like that, mm-hmm. like, you know, how typically you see Elizabeth One's hair.
Yeah.
She literally looks like a lion. It is actually insane.
She has these wild curls on top of her head.
Wild
and then she
curls.
Cuts it all off.
And then she fucking cuts it off.
And wears a wig of the same hair.
And it is so confusing.
It is confusing. She does it though to model herself after the Virgin Mary, to be like, I am clean, I am pure, essentially. And now when I wear my wig and my crown, I am regal, etc.
But also bald.
But also it's so silly. And fucking Emily Mortimer is her lady in waiting, standing there sobbing, chopping her hair off.
It's like high key. Her hair is gorgeous.
It's so pretty.
I can't imagine. I would also sob.
I would too. But also I'd be like, Emily, please. I'm 25. It can grow back. Come on.
I don't know, man. You could get the gout.
You could get that gout, girl. You could get that
gout. Get that gout, girl.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Like, Cate Blanchett has so many, like, lines in this movie that she sort of delivers with this glorious renowned, mm-hmm. where she's like, I am a virgin, or, like, I have become, like, this virgin, this like monarch,
right?
Like, this is me. And like I was saying earlier, when she was like, she says something along the lines of like, I will have no mistress.
Yeah.
Or like, I know, I will have one mistress and no master, because she is only mistress to her country, mm-hmm. and no one rules her. And mm-hmm. the way that she delivers these lines is so unbelievably unshaken. Like, this is why Cate Blanchett does theater.
Yes.
This is why she does the theater.
The theater.
It's because she has such a direct and profound ability to be able to speak to the audience in a very impactful and impassioned mm-hmm. way.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, she's like, she's truly divine in this role.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, oh God, I wish I was an adult in 1998 so I could have seen this debut and been like, oh, excuse me.
Excuse
Who are
me,
you?
Young thing.
Who are you coming up here?
Whom's thou?
Look who's arrived at the party.
It's Cate Blanchett.
Highly recommend watching that movie.
I recommend. Watch Elizabeth 1998. There's also apparently a sequel.
Elizabeth, Golden Age.
I don't know.
I've heard it's also very good.
Does this movie need a sequel, though?
It's just the rest of her reign,
I guess.
It's the part of her, because after this movie ends is when Mary Queen of Scots tries to come take the throne.
Yes.
And so that's what Elizabeth Golden Age is about.
Mary Queen of Scots.
A Queen of Scots.
I don't know if you guys watched the movie with Margot Robbie and Saoirse Ronan.
Okay.
It was good. It was good.
It got like not very much attention.
It did
got
not.
Nominated for best makeup?
I think best makeup and also I think best costume.
That would make sense.
Which glorious for both.
Sure.
Margot Robbie looked horrendous. It was perfect. She looked terrible. Brilliant. So terrible.
You won an Oscar just making beautiful actress look hideous.
Exactly.
Jokes on them. They didn't get an Oscar.
Exactly. So if you want to watch a movie that's like more recently made, it's telling the basically the exact same story. Watch Mary Queen of Scots.
Mary Queen of Scots.
Where Saoirse Ronan is able to offer like a good Scottish accent.
Yeah.
She's very nice. She's like, I am
Mary.
I don't know. I'm Mary. And I want to take your throne.
The rightful queen.
Yeah, I am the rightful queen.
Of England.
Of England, yeah.
We promise this is not the next accent we'll be
No. Honestly, the Scottish accent freaks me out.
I mean, so did Australian for a long time, and look at us now.
Dude, it sounds like they're eating corn.
Mary Queen of Scots.
If you had the chance to change your fate, would you? Like, no.
Every Scottish person who listens to this has just unsubscribed.
They're just like turning it all the way down to the point where they're like breaking their little car volume button.
We're so sorry, but I'm not actually that sorry.
I'm not sorry. Next.
Next. Monica, tell us what is the next film?
Honestly, I'm stoked to tell you about the next film.
This is a sleeper.
This is a fabulous sleeper hit. Definitely walk away from this episode watching this movie I'm about to say, and that is Notes on a Scandal. Came out in 2006, directed by Richard Eyre, screenplay by Patrick Marber, adapted from the novel What Was She Thinking? Notes on a Scandal by Zoe Heller.
I'm sure it's said with that exact inflection. What was she thinking?
What the fuck was she thinking?
I mean, honestly, valid question.
Notes on a Scandal. Barbara Covett, played by, of course, the one and only Dame Judi Dench.
Brilliant.
A veteran teacher at St. George's senses a kindred spirit in Sheba Hat, played by Kate Blanchett. No, there's not an Australian accent. The school's new art teacher. The younger woman's charisma intensely draws in the older, and the two become friends.
Best friends.
Then Barbara learns of Sheba's affair with a teenage student and becomes the keeper of the explosive secret.
What a film.
This is Scandal through and through.
Through and through. And the scandalous hits just keep on coming. This movie just, it doubles down on the scandal. So many times. And this is a tight 90.
This is, okay, the pacing of this movie is glorious.
Fantastic.
This is like, if you wanted a good popcorn flick, yeah, where like, it's truly a soap opera's worth of scandal.
But it's genuinely very well
done.
But
it's genuinely very well made, and the actors are fucking incredible, and the chemistry between Dame Judi Dench and Kate Blanchett it's off the charts.
It's amazing.
It's off the charts. They play so well off of each other. And it's just chef's kiss.
Yeah, and this is one of those movies that is about a fucked up thing, but the reason why it's good is because it makes you confront the humanity behind a very fucked up thing.
Yeah.
And makes you go like, I'm kind of feeling bad for this person, and I know I'm not supposed to. And that's why it makes you think, and it makes you like realize you're empathizing with people that you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And then makes you like re-examine everything you've ever thought about yourself.
100%. And Kate Blanchett plays a very convincing, like a spiritual is the wrong word, but
she's
like
supposed to be like this free spirited, like, woman,
boho, yeah, like think of an art teacher in your mind, and it's
and that's literally her.
It's literally her. You kind of see like an objective version of this woman, mm-hmm, because the movie isn't really told through Kate Blanchett's character.
No, it's told through Judi Dench's.
And so you're looking at this version of Kate Blanchett's character as this like insane art teacher, and you kind of feel a little bit, I don't know, like jealous, mm-hmm, of her lifestyle and her, mm-hmm, ability to kind of just like flow and move through life like water. And that's when like Dame Judi Dench's character gets a little bit like irked.
Yes.
And like that's kind of the understatement of the century.
Yeah, because okay, so Sheba, Bathsheba is her full name.
Sheba.
She shows up at the school, she's this new art teacher, and Judi Dench is automatically just like, no. because she's this like skeptical, hardened, bitchy, yeah, older teacher.
Think Madame Trunchbull from Matilda.
Madame Trunchbull.
Madam? Madam?
And so you're seeing Kate Blanchett through her eyes. And I really like that. I like how you're introduced to her from like an observer's point of view.
Yes.
Because that is so much of this character. She's sort of like this specimen that everyone around her is going like, we're so enchanted by you, but your life is so eccentric and different because like she's married to a man who's like 20 years older than her. Mm-hmm. And she has a son with Down syndrome and she has a daughter who's like rebellious, but after dinner, they all like get up and dance together in the living room. And it's like, they have this very unconventional yet like envy-worthy lifestyle. And so that's how you're introduced to her. And I think it's really, really brilliant.
Yeah. Her persona and her family, her way of life is something to be ogled. Mm-hmm. Like all the characters around her, including Judi Dench's character, all they can really do is stare or observe because she's so fucking crazy. But at the same time, like a great example is like Gwyneth Paltrow,
yeah,
right? Like Gwyneth is insane.
Right.
Like Gwyneth is actually crazy, but you can't help but envy her because of her talent and her grace and her, like, yes, these are like newfangled ideas, but like they're enviable because she seems really happy and she right. seems really fulfilled. And so that's kind of the same vibe that Kate Blanchett's character Sheba is giving us. It is the sort of the caricature or like the archetype of the like free spirited woman,
yeah,
who like doesn't give a fuck about what anyone thinks of her, but at the same time is like to a point almost like portraying this character.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is though is she really doesn't play it as if she's thinking about anybody else, to me at least. Like she seems to be like just like this is just her life.
Genuine, yeah.
She's just living it and you can kind of take it or leave it, and she doesn't really give that much thought about like how her life is unconventional in comparison to other people's. She just kind of like this is just her life and the end. And Kate Blanchett reminds me of like my friend's cool younger mom that I would never have.
Yeah, like
middle or high school.
Like she had the baby when she was like 22,
yeah,
and they raised him on a compound. With like other chitlins.
Yeah, and she's they had friends like, with her kids.
They had
and
like seven different salads for dinner.
Yes.
And the whole, and they like put on skits.
Yes. Exactly.
And she wore smocks and made her own sauces.
Exactly. And I love it so much because you are, as the viewer, are as intrigued and envious of her as Judi Dench is. And so you're like as emotionally invested
you're
in this woman
oh, you're fucking
as
in
Judi
it.
Dench, which is why when the shit hits the fan, because boy does it big time.
Oh, shit hits the fucking
you're
fan.
You're just like, oh my God. Because Kate Blanchett somehow begins sleeping with a 15-year-old student.
Which for is no reason.
Wild.
Which, by the way, again, this movie does a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
In its portrayal of this quote unquote situation between Kate Blanchett's character Sheba and this 15-year-old boy, this student, this child. And it very much is a scandal. Like
yes.
It's very
oh,
much
yes.
a it's very much a problem. There is no like there's a very clear defined line between what is like morally correct
right.
and what is wrong.
Yes.
And what is wrong here is the fact that she is having relations with a
yes.
child.
Yes.
Which is both illegal and also wrong.
Correct. Both of those things.
She is taking advantage of this poor boy.
Exactly. But what I will say is movies like this, I appreciate movies like this so much because it takes something objectively awful.
Yes.
And makes you lean in and go like, I know that this is bad, but I have to stick around in order to understand it.
Yeah, and you also end up feeling genuinely sad or bad for Kate Blanchett's character because her emotions are really raw and real in this movie. And for whatever reason, the movie puts you in a fucking chokehold and says, you have to feel bad for her.
Her emotions are unfounded, but they are they're genuine.
Yes. And because you're a human being witnessing other human emotion, you're like, oh, I feel kind of, is it bad that I feel bad for her?
Yeah.
Because, you know, her life gets ruined.
Yes.
And this is a terrible scandal, a terrible secret to have been exposed, because at the end of the day, like, she's just, again, this free-spirited human being that is truly just living for herself, mm-hmm. but is also very much like in her mind, nothing about this is wrong, but, and also it very much is.
Yeah. Like she knows it's wrong, but she's justifying it because she's like, but he does love me and I love him.
So in her mind, yeah. she's like, this isn't wrong because we have love. But objectively, that is wrong.
Correct.
But objectively, that is an incorrect way to think. But because she's so compelling as a character, you find yourself being like, I mean, I feel bad for you, though.
Yeah, I mean, and then on, add on top of it, the layer of Judi Dench, she is getting close to her for, she has ulterior motives. And because Judi Dench, she's essentially a closeted lesbian.
It's like unspecified.
Yeah.
But the movie sort of like leads you to believe that she is a queer person mm-hmm. or a lesbian, again, unspecified,
right.
who is infatuated with yes. Sheba.
And had to have a restraining order put against her by a former teacher.
Yes.
And so now you see like, okay, she is repeating this pattern again, and she is almost, I mean, not almost, she is blackmailing Kate Blanchett in a way, being like, I know the secret about you. I promise I won't tell anybody, but you have to be my very best friend. And it's fucking wild.
It's insane.
It is so insane.
There's so much coercion and manipulation and gaslighting and blackmailing in this movie. I'm telling you, it is like a soap opera, but it is so well made.
It is so well made. And there is a point when Kate Blanchett snaps. And up until this point, she's like this super kind, super warm woman. Granted, she has done an awful thing, but her persona through the whole thing is
again,
she's this very like warm maternal yes, figure.
Which is why you feel bad for her because exactly. again, this is sort of all wrapping up within itself. She's
exactly.
just so nice.
But then she finally snaps on Judi Dench. And it's like she has turned into a demon. It's like she's turned herself inside out. And it is riveting.
It is so good. Kate Blanchett is truly unhinged in this movie.
She's incredible. And I had heard the title of this movie before. I had no idea what it was about.
Oh, I had no idea what this movie was
about. None whatsoever. But I was like, she was nominated for an Academy Award. Everyone says it's like one of her best performances ever. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, we're going to watch it. And I'm so glad I did, because I don't think I would have watched this otherwise.
I would not have watched this
and
otherwise.
It is a movie that truly surprised me at how good of a time I was having watching this.
It was riveting. You could not take your eyes off of it. It was like watching The Undoing, where you know that it's kind of trash.
Yes. Yes.
But you're like, I cannot take my eyes off of this fucking yes. series.
Also, that actor, the actor who plays the 15-year-old
yes.
is brilliant.
So good.
Little Irish boy.
This little Irish leprechaun.
So I was very high when I watched this movie.
Oh my God.
And it, in all caps, also all typoed, it says...
I'm it scared. Says,
bon voyage to her little leprechaun.
No! Oh my God. Oh my God. Bon voyage.
Bon voyage, leprechaun.
I mean, he is kind of leprechaun-y
looking. He is leprechaun-y. I read in the trivia for this movie that Nicholas Holt almost got the role.
Oh, that would have been incredible.
Incredible. A baby Nicholas Holt with Kate Blanchett.
Ooh.
Can you imagine? Oh my God. The acting.
Oh, amazing. Okay. I can think of a better version of this movie.
It's with Nicholas Holt.
It's with Nicky Holt.
Nicky Holt.
Nicky Holt.
I would say if you're going to watch any of the movies from this episode, this is the one I would highly recommend.
Yeah.
Because it's the tight 90. It's a tight, I think it's 90. 97 to be exact.
It's tight 90.
And it's just so riveting.
Tight 90.
You can't find it anywhere except for Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah. Okay. So again, we were talking about this before we started this podcast. And I was like, you know, you can't find this anywhere. Because when you ask Siri on the Apple TV, like, hey, notes on a scandal.
Girl.
Notes on a scandal. She's like, nothing.
Doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. When you look at it online, it says it's not streaming anywhere. But then when you look it up on Amazon Prime Video, it's there. So go watch it there.
Yeah.
Because it's genuinely not available to buy or rent on iTunes.
Yeah, but very good film. Like, and very good film. Very happy we watched
it. It's so good. And it's so nice to be able to see someone like Dame Judi Dench and Cate Blanchett in the same movie without needing, feeling like they're competing for the spotlight.
Exactly.
They balanced out each other so well. Mm-hmm. And they are both incredibly strong women and strong actors.
Yes.
That, like, again, you didn't feel like anyone was swallowing each other whole.
Yeah.
It was truly such a pleasure to watch. When I tell you, like, it was a pleasure.
I was like, because, okay, Monica and I watch a lot of movies.
A lot of movies.
While I always have a good time in the end, there are some where I'm like, can we get to the end?
Yes.
Already?
Yes.
This one, I was like excited about what was happening the whole time. It was so good. It really shocked me.
Yeah. So this is a great example of how well Cate Blanchett plays with another really strong actor, because there are actors who can really hold their own, but they don't play nice with other folks.
Yeah,
it just doesn't happen like that for them. So Jessica, bring us home, baby. What's the third film?
The third film is Carol.
Wow.
Came out in 2016, directed by Todd Haynes, screenplay by Phyllis. How do you, Nagy?
I think it's Nagy.
Nagy?
No, I think it's Nagy.
Nagy? Okay. Screenplay by Phyllis Nagy, based on the 1952 romance novel The Price of Salt by Patricia Highsmith, which was then republished as Carol in 1990.
Yes, because it was just a better title.
Correct.
I don't want to know what The Price of Salt is.
Thérèse Bellavette, played by Rooney Mara, spots the beautiful, elegant Carol, played by Cate Blanchett, perusing the doll displays in a 1950s Manhattan department store. The two women develop a fast bond that becomes a love with complicated consequences.
It's probably the shortest description you could possibly give about this insane movie.
Yeah, because a lot happens. This was the first time you'd seen it, right?
Yes. This is the very first time I'd ever seen it.
Give me your first impressions.
First of all, the music is beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful Carter Burwell score in this film.
Gorgeous music. Gorgeous score. Just stunning in the background. It was a beautiful theme. I could not get it out of my head. It was gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Second impression, this was a spicy movie.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, who let the dogs out? Am I right? Who let these 1950s women act in such a scandalous way?
I mean, that's the point. They were trying to not allow it.
Exactly. And then one of the things that I really love that this movie does is that the central characters, Carol and Therese, or Therese.
It's Thérèse.
Thérèse. Carol and Thérèse are like in this bubble of, we don't give a fuck what anyone thinks about us until it starts affecting the people that we love.
Correct.
And then we care. Like, the way that they treat their sexuality, the way that they treat their sexual orientation, mm-hmm. is truly just about, like, or rather their sexual identity is truly just about, like, how they feel and who they are on the inside.
Yeah.
And nothing else. It's not about shame. Like, they don't feel shame for how they feel. The people around them feel shame for how they feel.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting to see such a modern perspective come out of these, honestly, outdated archetypes of mm-hmm. women, right? We've got like the housewife, we've yes. got like the woman working in the department store.
Yeah, like the young woman in New York City.
Yeah, trying to be an artist. Like, very, very strong archetypes from the 1950s that you wouldn't otherwise expect to be that forward thinking.
No.
And it was just very exciting to watch, especially because Cate Blanchett plays such a gorgeous woman.
She is truly a specimen. Like, I think the way that her character is observed in this movie is very similar to how she's observed in Notes on a Scandal.
Yes.
Where she's just sort of this like ethereal, otherworldly woman that like you just want to know about her. and you want to know like who she is and what she's doing and how she got to be the way that she is. And like the way that Cate Blanchett carries herself in this movie, you can see how much she has matured as an actress.
Oh yeah.
In this movie, because
it's very subtle.
It really is. Like, we're presented with this, I think it takes place specifically in 1952.
Yeah.
Between 1952 and 53.
Early 50s.
Exactly. And so you're presented with this woman. She's this very rich housewife who like appears to have it all. Like, she has her husband and she has the kids and she can buy whatever toy she wants for them. And she wears this glamorous fur coat everywhere. And she's just like stunningly so beautiful. And normally when women like this are portrayed in films, they're very pristine.
Yes.
And in this, you get to see sort of another side of that. And she, a lot of the success of Cate Blanchett in this role is just in the mannerisms of Carol.
Yes.
Like, she's a 1952 rich housewife who's not afraid to run her fingers through her perfectly like bobbed hair.
Yes.
And that seems small, but it is such a huge thing.
Oh, it's so significant. It's so significant. She's not afraid to kiss someone with her lipstick on.
Yes.
And it's not just like a peck. It's like a full on like Frencher.
Yes. And when she has company over and she's relaxing with Therese, she takes her heels off. Like, it's all of these little things that, of course, I'm sure to an extent it was in the book, it was in the script, whatever. But ultimately, Cate Blanchett is the person executing this, like, this woman who appears to have it all, but is sort of leading like a double life in a way.
She's also very confident in her own identity.
She's incredibly controlled and composed.
She's very controlled. I think a lot of it just comes with age, right? A lot of it comes with the time that she has spent on this earth trying to field people's, I don't know, like opinions about her, trying to field people's suspicions about her, right? So there's this character played by Sarah Paulson who, and they're both incredible in this movie together,
so good.
By the way. Again, go watch that interview. It's on today's YouTube channel. There's this side character, if you will.
Yeah.
Sarah Paulson's character named Abby. Aunt Abby to the little girl.
Yes.
And she is not only a childhood friend to Cate Blanchett's character, Carol, but also about 5 years ago to the point of this movie, a lover of Cate Blanchett's character, Carol. And a large part of that, you know, a big theme of their like relationship is just security. Like, they feel very comfortable around each other. And even though it didn't work out, like it didn't work out that they were together, they're free to be able to talk to each other about like other women that they're looking at, right? Sarah Paulson is telling Cate Blanchett about how she's got her eyes on this redhead.
Mm-hmm.
And Cate Blanchett's like, oh, you think you can handle a redhead?
Yeah.
And it's just very funny, and it's very nice to see this warm and loving and also, I wouldn't say stable, but I would say like secure relationship between these two women. And again, like a lot of Cate Blanchett's character's own confidence and security comes from being able to find these kinds of relationships and not feel ashamed about them, because she knows that they are good and the intentions are good, and it's quite literally the same as any other relationship that is good and pure.
Yeah.
And so when she meets the character, Rooney Mara's character, Therese, whatever. She's sort of like transfixed by this idea of like innocence and like naivete. And it's not quite predatory. Like, they are very much consenting adults.
Yes.
But it's very much like, it's less so a conquest and more so a transfixion. Like, she's very transfixed by this like passionate individual, this artist, this woman who very much has her own opinion about life, and from the very beginning she's like, from the very beginning she doesn't offer Cate Blanchett's character a doll. She wants her to buy her kid a train set because she thinks that that's a better present.
Yeah.
And she's not afraid to let her know that. So again, like, I think Carol is just very, very enamored by other kindred spirits, like other people that are kind of like her, just a little bit outside of the ordinary. And it makes for a very beautiful and entertaining film.
Mm-hmm. It really does. And like, when you're watching it, you're kind of going, like, and this is back to your point about how it's not exactly a predatory relationship, but it is different mm-hmm. than what you would normally think of as like someone meeting someone and courting them and falling in love with them, etc. But and you're watching it, you're kind of going like why are they going about it this way? And you remember it's 1952 mm-hmm. and they're both queer women, and or Cate Blanchett is, and Rooney Mara doesn't know, and she's still figuring out her sexuality, etc. And you're kind of like, well, what other option did they have?
Yeah. Like, what other option did they have but leave the gloves on the counter?
Yeah, and like have a flirtation over the phone, and then have a flirtatious lunch, and then have a flirtatious meeting at home, and then kind of just see what happens. And it's not uncomfortable, but it is intriguing and it is fascinating because it is two very different ends of this spectrum for this narrative, where you have Therese, who has never been with a woman before. She's kind of confused about love in her life in general because she has this guy that loves her, in quotes,
in massive quotes.
But she's like, I don't really know what love is. I don't really know what settling down looks like for me. And then there's Carol, who's full ass settled down already.
This bitch is married. This bitch is so married, she's divorced.
Yes, exactly. Like, she is very settled. She very much knows her sexuality. She very much knows what she wants. And yet they both want each other while coming from very opposite ends of this like sexuality narrative. And that's why it's so fascinating to watch them come together and then to see their dynamic and to also see the choices that are placed in front of them. Because I don't know about you, but when I watched it, I'm just kind of like, this is clearly taking such a toll on both of you your family. And like, Cate Blanchett, you're going to lose your fucking kids. Like, I know that your sexuality is an integral part of your identity, and love truly, I mean, like, you should have a right to pursue that. But in 1952, if you're about to lose fucking everything, I would just stay married to the rich man for the looks. I don't know.
It's easier.
It seems like when you're a viewer, you're like, come on, it's just easier. But she can't bring herself to do it. And I have such massive respect for that, especially given the time period.
She has a lot of fortitude about what she conceives to be her perfect life, her ideal life. There's this scene at the end of the movie when she is talking to the lawyers mm-hmm. in the, not the courtroom, but like the room next to the courtroom where all the lawyers and her ex-husband are all gathered to sort of like go over this quote unquote morality clause. What the fuck does that even mean, right? Like, this morality clause, that this injunction that her ex-husband has placed upon her in order to secure full custody of his child. And she sort of looks at everyone and is like, I am not going to, she's essentially saying, like, I'm not going to dim my shine. I am not going to live this insane life where I pretend like I don't love women. That's not going to happen. But what is going to happen is I'm going to see my kid, because it would be fucking stupid if I couldn't.
Yeah.
And it makes the most sense in the world that we live in for you, my ex-husband, to have full custody of the child, because that means her life's going to be easier. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to make my life worse by living under this like insane fake identity of being a heterosexual woman. That's not going to happen. Yes. So she has a lot of fortitude, and she stays very true to herself throughout the entire film. And that is ultimately what saves her. Mm-hmm. That's ultimately what saves her relationship with her daughter. That's ultimately what saves her relationship with her ex-husband.
Yeah. Because you do have to have a relationship in order for custody to fucking work.
Exactly. And I think, like, yes, the easier option is for her to say, like, well, yeah, I'm just going to stay married and have, like, a couple of flings on the side. Mm-hmm. But that's not what she wants.
Yeah, no, it would be too painful for her. And it's also not fair to the people that she's having those relationships with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I love about a lot of the dialogue in this movie, it's very evocative. Mm-hmm. Nothing is said, like, very straightforward in this movie.
Yeah.
They kind of dance around a lot of different subjects and dance around a lot of like are you, aren't you, like, mm-hmm. kind of a situation, and they don't really say very much, but the emotions behind the words,
yes,
however bland the words are, the emotions are very present,
yes,
and kind of like puncture through everything. So I like that the movie like trusts its audience to like mm-hmm. no one has to spell it out for you, hunties. Like,
yeah,
they are very much in love, and they have this, what doesn't necessarily seem like a flirtationship on paper. Like, if you were to read these words on paper, right, it would not feel like they're flirting. But the way that they're saying things and the emotions that they are like injecting into these words, into these sentences, offer you so much more about their relationship. And that is how you sort of like believe that they are kind of not destined for each other, but that they can have a really great love.
Yeah, they have a very meaningful relationship to each other. I think you were left at the end of the movie knowing that like these two women are forever changed by each other. Mm-hmm. But I do love that in the end, like it really, it's just not about Therese anymore. It's because they're, for me at least, their whole relationship, I'm kind of going like, are they actually super, super in love, or is she just like escaping and Therese was there? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, I don't deny that they do love each other, but I don't think that Therese is Carol's like be all end all.
Yeah.
I think she'll be okay without her, which to me at least was a very important thing to come away from the movie with, because I think you have to know that these characters loved each other, accepted what happened between them, like were felt grateful for how they've changed each other, but then were ultimately okay without each other, but still went on to like live authentic lives.
Exactly. And of course, like, it's very ambiguous at the end as to whether or not they either get back together or kind of just admire each other from afar, mm-hmm, or like pine after each other. Like, it's very ambiguous, but I think at the end of the day, Carol's life looks very different, but yes, she is so much more fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And, Therese.
Yes, Therese.
Therese's life also is very fulfilled, right? She finally sort of got out of her own way and decided to become a photographer. She works for the New York Times now. And Carol is like a buyer at a furniture store and has her own apartment and is able to like live her life without fucking strings attached to everything. And she doesn't have to ask permission for, you know, of anyone. She doesn't have to do anything that would put her in a position where she has to live inauthentically.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the greatest triumph of the movie, is the fact that she is able to like assert her independence, mm-hmm, in her own way and not have to rely on anyone to fabricate a life for her so that she can live comfortably. Totally. It's a very moving film.
It really is. It really, really is. And like you said, the ending is ambiguous and you kind of just go like, if they end up together, great, that would be awesome. But also like, these bitches are living and I'm happy for them.
And also like, Cate Blanchett offers these like little morsels of humanity throughout like her hard shell exterior.
Yeah.
Like, she's like that chocolate sauce that once it touches the ice cream, it gets very like rigid and hard.
She's like a magic shell.
She's like a magic shell. And then once you get to the ooey gooey inside, you realize that she's like a vivacious woman.
Right.
And she has like a lot of vigor and like zest for living and for life. And she has rage inside, yes, of her. There is this scene where she is at this like hotel, motel, whatever.
Holiday Inn?
Holiday, honestly, the Holiday Inn.
The hotel, motel,
I can't. She's at this Holiday Inn. And she is obviously with Therese, and they obviously had a night of rollicking. And
of rollicking? Do you mean frolicking?
No, rollicking.
And they romping
and rollicking. They had a night of romping and rollicking, and there's this like weird dude that's like always smiling at them and like saying hi to Therese. And he's just fucking weird. He's weird at the ice machine. He's weird in the cafeteria.
He's weird all the time.
He's just fucking weird.
Yep.
And it turns out that this mofo is a private investigator, uh-huh, hired by Carol's ex-husband.
His name is like Hodge.
His name is
very odd name.
His name, her ex-husband's like name is like Harge or something.
Yeah, it's like Harge
or like Horgy.
Either way,
I don't know.
Very weird.
Very like it's like Hogarth. I don't know. Whatever his name is, uh-huh, is fucking weird. But the point is, he hired this private eye who like has recorded all of their rollicking.
Yes, he through had, the like, wall. A microphone in the wall, yeah.
And like an amplifier, and it was a whole, and like he just recorded all these reels and then like sent them to her ex-husband and was like, sorry, ma'am, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah.
And she, this bitch pulls out a fucking gun.
Yep. She's like, I'm gonna shoot your ass.
She pulls a pistol out of her like little handbag or whatever and like marches right up to that guy and holds the gun in his fucking face and is like, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you? Like, you don't know anything, you little motherfucker.
Yep.
It is such a good scene because you see this like, this like ferociousness in Kate Blanchett's eyes and you literally cannot look away. And also, this bitch pulls the trigger, but there are no
bullets. There are no bullets. Played so, your damn self.
It's like, you played yourself, Carol. You played yourself. So she just doesn't. I mean, Oscar, well deserved.
But she didn't get it. But nominated.
Nominated. Well deserved nomination.
Very, very.
As
well,
we know, she only got the Oscar for Blue Jasmine and the Aviator.
The Aviator.
The Aviator.
You, Carol is well worth it. It is a very like quiet movie.
It's very quiet. It kind of reminded me of what's that movie with Nicole Kidman and the nose?
The Hours.
The Hours. It reminded me of The Hours.
I was gonna say that Julianne Moore's character, some of her like mannerisms remind me of Carol a lot.
Julianne Moore.
She plays the 1950s housewife.
Yes. Yeah. The one who's pregnant.
Yeah, she's just like, they're not at all the same character, but not just this sort of like breaking the mold of like the pristine.
Yes.
Like statuesque ideas that we have of 1950s women.
Yeah. So just again, be warned, the pacing is slow.
Yeah.
And it's a very quiet film, but I think well worth the watch if you're
really,
looking
really
for,
beautiful.
If you're looking for something a little more, I don't know, romantic.
Yeah. And to make you feel something.
Make you feel something tasty.
Well, that was Kate Blanchett.
That was Kate Blanchett.
Monica, what have you dabbled in?
Honestly, I have dabbled in my dog. I have dabbled in my dog, Carrie. She very recently got a spay, but she also hurt her paw.
Poor little lady.
She's a very rambunctious pup.
She is a rambunctious scamp.
Yeah, she really is scampy. She really is shrimp scampy from Bubba Gump.
Yes, I'm sure you can all hear her collar dangling in the background of our various recent episodes.
Oh, I'm certain of it. But, you know,
she's just saying hi.
She is just... She's a special pooch. Yeah. She's very energetic and gets herself into predicaments.
Yeah.
That's her barking upstairs if you didn't hear that.
We had to send Erin upstairs with her to calm her down because she was
rambunctious.
Going crazy.
So yeah, I've been dabbling in her. She is wearing the Elizabethan cone, which I find ironic because we were talking about Elizabeth I.
And Shakespeare in Love not too long ago, too.
Which, by the way, listen to our Gwyneth Paltrow episode.
Yes.
If you haven't already, it's called Goopy Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes.
It's
Goop Daddy.
It's goopy goop deliciousness. But otherwise, I mean, she's a special poochie, but... I'm ready for her to be healed from her spay. She needs to go on walks. She needs to calm the fuck down. Yeah. In the words of one T.T. Swift, she needs to calm down. Jessica, what have you dabbled in?
I just got back from the mountains.
Tell us about the woods.
I went to the mountains up near Bishop with my friend Hannah.
Oh, shout out
and
to Hannah.
I just hung out in an A-frame for a week and I went to a ghost town and I went to a haunted hotel. It was very fun.
Ugh, I love it. Tell the listeners what it's called.
What's called?
Everything.
I went to the ghost town of Bodie, and then the haunted hotel is in a town called Bridgeport, which is a little bit past Bodie. But yeah, there's a haunted, it's haunted by the White Lady of Bridgeport.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Very fun.
How does she haunt?
Oh, she just stands there and she just appears and then goes away.
Good haunting.
Exactly.
Good haunting unto thee.
Good haunting. Good job, White Lady.
Good haunting. But yeah, any questions today, Jessica?
No.
Well, You must rectify that, listener. Send us your questions.
Yes, please.
Send us your questions. You can send it to our email. I think it's something like John Favreau.
Is allegedly my daddy at gmail.com.
Yeah, you send
or
it there.
You can DM us.
DM us. I don't know. At John Favreau is my daddy pod on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Get on that.
Get on it.
We're at 200 followers now.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Bang, bang.
Try and stop us.
Try and stop us from reaching 1 billion.
Exactly.
Try. Just try.
And finally, don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Good night, Monica.
Good night, Jessica.